The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai, episode 280. Welcome to the Business Couch with Dr. Yishai, where we talk about applying high leverage psychology in your business and life. I'm your host, Dr. Yishai Barkadari, licensed psychologist, private practice owner, speaker, executive coach, and consultant. I became a psychologist to learn how to leverage psychology and help others do the same. For over a decade, I've been tracking how psychology gets in the way of smart and results-driven people. For years, I've developed frameworks and tools to help them leverage psychology instead to launch themselves forward. It's my mission to share my hard-earned lessons with you so you can launch yourself forward too. I can't wait to talk high leverage psychology with you so you can learn to take higher leverage action today. We're on break between seasons, but I wanted to share some of my favorite and best episodes in the meantime. Today, I'm breaking down high performance to make it simple and predictable because massive success is built on the back of driven, high-performing people. You'll hear examples, research, and strategies proven to create high performance that you can start applying for yourself and your business today. And now, without further ado, let's dive into how to curate and cultivate high performance. Jane saunters into my office and almost immediately crumples into her seat. She instantly bursts into a tirade. She's clearly frustrated, angry, upset, discouraged, and miserable. She's just been passed up for promotion into a leadership and strategic position at her tech company for the third time in 8 months. Despite clearly asking about and diligently working towards being ready and capable to step up and step into that role for over a year, despite outperforming all the other candidates by miles, despite her own manager's insistence that she was tipped for the job, despite her passion, perseverance, warmth, and brilliance. But that's not even the worst of it. On top of all of that, Jane has been taking on extra projects whose deliverables internally saved the company hundreds of person hours per month and millions of dollars annually. Not only has she been taking them on, she's been the mastermind, the brain behind the projects. She's even sitting on three more projects, just like the first one, waiting in the wings, but she doesn't have the right access, resources, or support to do them. In fact, Jane continues being overloaded with more work because several of her colleagues just left. As though that's the best way to help the company or Jane. She's on the verge of leaving herself. Not only is it understandable, it is, unfortunately, actually quite common. In fact, I have regularly heard from multiple VPs that they struggle to keep their most efficient, high-performing people. The same high performers who are often ambitious, they run out of road and opportunity to grow and leave to pursue their passion and purpose elsewhere. Jane is, by nearly every metric, a clear high performer. In fact, she's the high performer among high performers at her company, outperforming practically everyone else by miles. I ask her to check and share just how much she does compared to her peers. The result? She completes 300% more work than the next most productive person on her team. Before counting her extra projects that are saving the company millions of dollars and hundreds more hours of work for other people. Her company is about to lose 4 employees worth of people and the potential to save 8 plus figures in costs just because of the projects that Jane has and may not end up completing before she leaves. They actually acknowledge directly to Jane that they know they're underpaying her, even for her baseline salary. If you knew you were in that position, would you ignore it? It seems absolutely insane to let Jane slip away. So today, I'm going to talk about how to find and keep your very own Jane instead of passing her up or pushing her out the door. Today, I'm going to talk about 3 levels that affect performance: individual, team, and business. I'm going to break them down, dig in, get nitty gritty, and then zoom back out to bring the big picture together for you. And we're going to start on the individual level. You see, if you want people to be the highest performers they can be, then the first thing you need to do is set your business aside, at least temporarily, because their performance isn't about you. It's all about them, even though you and your business are the beneficiary of their best work. You see, if you keep putting more of the goals and needs of the business into the mix of enabling their highest performance, you might overburden, stifle, or snuff out opportunity for them to learn and grow and get faster. You might hamper their ability to take the time and intention to do their best work. You might crush their motivation to care and invest in your business and in your goals. I know that might sound a little paradoxical, that you need to get your business out of the way in order to get your high performers performing their best. But you can kind of think about it a little bit like ego. If you or your business needs to take center stage all the time, just like in a conversation, if your ego needs to take front and center all the time, it gets all the attention. Well, what are you going to get out of that conversation? At best, the other person will placate you. At worst, it's going to really put them off. And that, I think, is something that can happen really easily when people are unwilling or unable to start by setting their business aside. And that leads us to the second step here. Get to know the person. Carve out the time and the opportunity and ask over and over again and confirm. What are their wants, their needs, their goals, their dreams? What is important for them personally and professionally? What's important for them in the present? What is really meaningful or urgent? What are they currently working on? And what are they looking forward to? What kind of growth and future do they want to create for themselves? Because if your company and if you as a leader cannot help facilitate or build that road or that bridge to the next place they want to go, then guess how long they're really going to stick around? Guess how they're going to experience the company or opportunity? Guess how quickly they're going to run out of road? And that's one of the first things that's really important to get to know. There are a few other ones, and I'm really going to outline them for you here. The second one is understand the challenges and gaps that, first of all, they want to work on, and second of all, they may not want to work on and would prefer to have accommodated or work around. Because we all have challenges, we all have gaps in skill, but we don't all want to learn or become experts or address every single area. Some people are really driven that way and they get pulled in a lot of different directions. And sometimes that can actually end up being a distraction where they keep getting pulled in all the different directions. So having clarity on what they want to work on as far as their challenges or gaps and what they may not want to work on or address and would prefer to have accommodated or outsourced or worked around is really important, because if you're not clear on that, you may end up pushing for some change, some work, some growth, some improvement that they don't particularly care for, that they don't see as important for where they want to go. or even if they see it as important, they may not yet be ready or willing to put in that work. And of course, there's a difference between somebody who is really uninterested or unavailable or unable, maybe even uncoachable, that they're not willing to put in the work or the effort to learn or to work on certain parts of themselves for whatever the reasons are. And at times, that can be potentially harmful for your company. And it's a process of continuing to pay close attention to that. And that's a little bit more on, we'll call it the business side, which I'll get to later. But to come back, it's really important to understand challenges and gaps that your high performers want or don't want to work on. It's also important to understand when and how they react when under pressure or after making a mistake. Having a deeper understanding of how people work under pressure is going to allow you to really make sense of when something is happening, particularly when there's a challenge, there's a mistake that was made, there's an upcoming deadline, and different people, different high performers are going to have different responses or different reactions to that. Some high performers would actually really prefer to have just a deadline and allowed totally on their own, and that pressure as it builds up really builds momentum and motivation for them. For some high performers, it's actually really helpful to have longer timeframes so they can create a longer tailed structure so that they can consistently do work and produce and perform rather than getting closer to the deadline and having a lot more to get done and more pressure. Being aware of how people respond under pressure or after making a mistake is a critical part of ensuring that that kind of high performance continues and that you as a leader are able to recognize, address, and even harness those tendencies. Last, in terms of getting to know the person, understand how they think about, internalize, and respond to conflict. It's practically impossible to completely extricate conflict from the work arena, from working at a company. At different times, people are going to have different opinions, different perspectives, different ideas, different strategies, and different personalities or ways of communicating. And when those two things come to a head, what you really need is to understand how your highest performers experience that, how they respond, how they internalize, and what happens afterwards. Because ultimately, as a leader and as somebody who wants them to engage in their highest performance as much as possible, if you don't understand and address those things in a way that helps them learn to resolve and move forward, or to resolve and address it and move forward with your support, then that can absolutely throw huge wrenches in the gears and or can even be a significant contributor to people walking out the door and never wanting to come back. Third, it's really important to understand, to learn how your people experience support, because support is absolutely critical to engaging consistently in high performance. In fact, people thrive in environments that are demanding and have really high expectations when there is a lot of support. And that comes straight from research conducted by Adam Grant, who's a professor at the Wharton School of Business. Without that support, though, what can really happen is those high demands start to take over. They create a snowball or an avalanche of pressure, and that ends up actually really pushing people away or kind of crushing them in terms of their ability to be consistently productive. So, here are a few questions you can ask yourself or to explore with your people in terms of understanding how do they experience support in the most effective and productive way for them. Is it A, verbally through affirmation? B, interpersonally through listening and asking questions? C, hands-on through step-by-step guidance? D, independently by communicating trust and delegating more responsibility to them? those four different approaches are among many, many other ones. I just wanted to outline some of the ones that I've seen a lot. And for some people, what's really important is for them to come to you and show you what they're doing and to receive affirmation and perhaps some degree of feedback or direction or tweaks. For some people, it's the affirmation that's most important. For some people, it's the feedback that's most important. For some people, it's really that interpersonal part of the process. It's them talking and you're listening to them and asking them questions, questions to get them thinking, questions to guide them to the next place that they may need to go without exactly telling them, and maybe even without having a specific idea in mind, just allowing them to engage in that process in the context of being able to speak with their supporter. As far as the hands-on, for some people, it really helps to get somebody showing them by example. Consider briefly that if somebody tried to explain to you with words how to whistle, it may not be quite as easy to develop or learn from that as it is if they were to really show and repeat and guide and give you a step by step and display that so that you could really see exactly what is happening. And even with whistling, it's not like we can always see what's going on in people's mouths, especially when their mouths are mostly closed. But having step-by-step guidance can be incredibly useful and really helpful for some of your highest performers, especially for procedures, policies, or rules. The fourth piece of focusing on the individual is really putting in the work as leadership to pave a path forward that both incorporates their passion and their pursuit of purpose. And it's really important to talk about alignment here because it is absolutely key. Knowing what your people care most deeply about and why they care about it really allows you to either carve the track for them to just zoom on or to understand the limits of what you can expect from them and what you can do for them. And this touches a little bit on one of the other elements that I mentioned before, which is the business level. And it's important to address a few caveats because people aren't always direct about this, whether on interviews or some people, even after the interview, even after they're working for weeks or months or years, they're not always clear about it for themselves. Some people are not yet clear on their passion, their pursuit of purpose. And it can help to be blunt or forward about it because putting it on the table means it's something that can get addressed. So for example, you might say something like the following. It's important that I really understand what you care about and what you're passionate about. If at all possible, I want to create a space for you here that you can pursue your passion and what you care most about to your heart's desire, that you can do work that is meaningful, fulfilling, exciting. And if it's not something we can create for you here, that might be a recipe for both you and us all being unsatisfied, frustrated, and unmotivated down the line. And nobody wants that. I'm sure you don't want it, and we don't want that. Here are some questions you can also ask to try to understand or gain some amount of alignment. You can ask, what do you really love doing at work, in your professional life, and even outside of work? Why do you want to wake up in the morning and give more in your daily life? Essentially asking, what's your why? And the third piece of it is to take the time and put in the energy to either build that into their daily work or maybe to consider letting them go. The fifth and last piece I want to focus on for the individual level is to ask for, receive, and respond to honest, clear, direct feedback. And here there are a couple of things that are really important to dig into. First is cultivating a psychologically safe relationship or space in which they can share what is and is not working for them. Whenever people share their frustrations, their challenges, their feelings, or shortcomings, whether for themselves or about people around them, it's really important to be careful and intentional about acknowledging and not invalidating their experience and perception. If they fear retribution, if they are afraid of getting judged or dismissed, if they expect that they're not going to be heard, but rather they're likely to be ignored, then they become incentivized to hide rather than share. And that creates an environment where their challenges, their needs, and their goals are not being addressed. And it can even be used against them or dangled in front of them like a carrot. If you've ever been in a job or in a position where someone dangled a promotion in front of you or offered you lip service saying, you know, we'll think about that, whereas it's clear that in reality they're not going to do that, then you'll understand what it's like to be on the receiving end of this. It's really important because for every person who's a high performer, it's important for them to know and recognize and see that their contribution, their thought, their process is meaningful and contributes meaningfully to what they do at your company. In order to get buy-in from them individually, it's really important to be aware that their voice needs to be heard. And as a bonus, consistently and reliably implementing feedback really builds trust and allows you to improve the process of enabling and empowering your high performers. With all of that said, the individual focus on making sure that you set your business aside, that you get to know the person and repeatedly understand what's important to them, that you learn how they experience support, that you put in the work to pave a path forward that incorporates their passion and their pursuit of purpose, and that you ask, receive, and respond to honest, clear, direct feedback. The next level to consider is the team level. And I want to start with a researcher by the name of Bruce Wayne Tuckman. And yes, his middle name is actually Wayne, who in 1966, as a psychology researcher who's looking at the process of groups across tens of thousands of people, he formulated the first version of what's known as Tuckman's stages of group development, which he then updated later in 1977. His work has had a tremendous and remarkable impact on group work, even though many of us may not recognize it at first. From therapy groups to sports teams to work teams to coaching and masterminds to how people create and moderate Facebook groups, Tuckman's work has trickled into almost every kind of group experience, and the stages he describes are universally apparent. I sometimes think of Bruce Wayne Tuckman as the Batman of group psychology and development. Tuckman's five stages of group development are forming, storming, norming, performing, and adjourning. And before we jump in deeper for each of those stages, I just want to point out that the fourth stage is performing. And frequently, groups that develop well into that stage outperform nearly all expectations, which means, and I'm going to dig into and uncover more of this, it means that high performance is a later stage of a developmental group process. While one element is individual, there's absolutely a group process that contributes to the performance of individuals and meeting the goals of the group at large. In fact, That is what Jane was struggling with when she walked into my office. She didn't individually struggle as a high performer. It was the group process and its lack of effective development which was crushing her passion, performance, and purpose. So let's dig into the five stages. Stage one, forming, is when members initially form or join a group. And in that stage, the goals may not be clear or they might not be detailed out just yet. People are often in the process of getting oriented to the environment, to each other, and to the shared goals and outcomes. In that stage, people tend to behave and interact much more independently rather than jointly as a group. And there can be a lot of tiptoeing because without clear expectations, it's unclear if somebody may be rewarded or punished for engaging in a particular way. So to move on from this particular stage, people need to become willing to risk conflict by communicating and sharing their needs, goals, and perspectives. In a sense, it's almost like what's happening when somebody is interviewing and getting onboarded. They may not yet know or understand what culture is like at the place that they're interviewing, or even once they've accepted a job, they might have an initial impression, but it's not exactly clear what is expected of them. Sometimes those expectations are communicated better upfront. Other times, there are certainly pieces of it that may not be. Which leads us to the second stage, storming. And storming is all about team development, where people are working towards a common framework. The major question in storming is, will you listen to me? Will my team listen to me? Can I trust that you, that my team, have my best interest at heart? Will I get what I need from other people in this group? This is the process that can be challenging because people are voicing opinions, sometimes clashing or experiencing conflict with each other, whether that's on a personality level, on a role level, or on a contribution level. People are evaluating, even judging each other, and trying to hold each other accountable or figure out how to do so and if it will be received well. They may also be wondering and keeping an eye out for how are people going to hold me accountable if or when I make a mistake or screw up, or even if I just show up as myself. Will that be received well? At this stage, there can also be competition over where in a positional hierarchy each person fits. And fights can break out, which is especially common when a new leader comes in and may shake up previously held positions, expectations, and procedures, or when a company is acquired and there's a big shakeup in how and who is in charge and what direction they may be going. The tasks here involve engaging in and learning how to resolve conflict, developing accountability processes, and navigating the tension between leaning on each other and being open and vulnerable. Some groups work through this stage quickly, and some can even potentially skip it, while others may get stuck here and even fall apart. Storming can be what's happening when somebody objects to a piece of feedback, to the way feedback is being communicated, to an interaction, to when somebody experiences or perceives an overstep, or when they have a line that gets crossed in the course of being communicated with or doing their work or somebody else working with them. And when and if they can really, as an individual and in the group as a team, work through that, they move into the third stage, which is norming. And norming is when everyone in the group is shouldering responsibility, is caring and engaging in accomplishing the group's goals together. In this process, team members cultivate closeness, clarify roles, support interdependent work, and learn to tolerate and even value their individual differences and perspectives. But one risk is that coming out of or skipping the storming process and developing a more stable, team-oriented way of accomplishing tasks and goals altogether might disincentivize some people from sharing potentially controversial perspectives or feedback, essentially not wanting to rock the boat especially after they finally hit calm waters. And that's something to pay close attention to, because there are times where teams and groups are thrown back into storming without realizing, or get stuck in norming and get stuck in a groupthink and all in conforming instead of norming. And what that can lead to is it can actually trip up both your high performers and the teams that they're working on. However, when norming goes well, the group moves into the next stage, performing, where individuals in the group at large are focusing on accomplishing. And often they exceed their shared goals because it's built on the foundation of clarity, knowledge, skill, and experience of working together towards the shared goal. And that makes this stage all about what they can get done individually and as part of a well-designed, well-oiled machine. In other words, performing is what happens when forming, storming, and norming are a process that is intentionally engaged in and worked through and executed really well. Performing is really the consequence of those first three processes that go very well, and where everybody is on board, aligned, engaged with the goals for the group. It's also important to understand the fifth stage, even though many of us don't like to think about it or we don't often recognize it. And the fifth stage is adjourning, which is the end of the group's work together. And that can happen whether one person is leaving the group or the team to another team in the same company, or whether they're leaving the company. Or it might be that somebody is taking their place. Or it could be that somebody new is being added to the team, and so everything's going to be shifting a little bit. There's a process of ending the way the previous group had worked together in order to accommodate this new group that's kind of forming, even with one person joining a 5 or 6 or 8 person team. At some point, it might even be the case that the entire team has left or changed up. And it's important to recognize that anytime someone new shows up, there's going to be a kind of adjourning and then a renewed forming. And it's very much like a life cycle. So here are some key highlights to take away from these 5 stages of development of groups and teams that Tuckman outlined. Every new person is getting oriented, even at the earliest interview phase. The orienting or onboarding process is a crucial foundation piece. But at the same time, there is some risk of predetermining too much. And groups will predictably undergo their own process of figuring out how to interact and who can be relied on for what. Sharing a common vision, mission, values, and goals is critical to getting everyone on board. And clarifying the group's shared goals, expected, acceptable, and unacceptable ways of interacting with each other as a group is extremely important. Creating space for divergent views and conflict, while also having a way to navigate and work through them, are both an expected process and serve as foundation building for interdependent and trust-based teamwork. Criticism, invalidation, and dismissing each other may occur, but tolerating and allowing it can have serious implications for whether the team can really come together and perform at their highest level. Performance is not just an outcome. It's a process and the end result of focusing on and developing through predictable stages. Performance is not just individual. It's a shared process and accomplishment, which is dependent on how individuals in the group communicate, interact, and work together. And all teams change, break up, and many reform in some way. Recognizing and addressing this process is important, and ignoring it can mean unintentionally skipping out on foundational forming, storming, and norming processes, which is going to absolutely impact the performing stage. Finally, the third level that I want to quickly address is the business level, because it's important to ensure that anybody you're getting on board is the right fit, that they belong on your bus, and that you have an empty seat for anyone you bring on board. It's incredibly important, because if you have a high performer, but the way in which, or the specialty that they have, that they are a high performer, is totally useless to your business, or the direction in which they want to take that is a direction that is divergent from your business, then you are going to end up really struggling to be on the same page, and you may end up parting ways sooner rather than later. Harnessing and directing the wants, needs, goals, and dreams of your people in context of your company is really where the business comes in and comes back in. Because being clear about your mission, vision, and values is critical. Without it, people may jump on board, not realizing that the ship or the plane is headed to a destination that is opposite where they may want to go, even though it's a really wonderful direction and it's a wonderful destination for you and so many people at the company. But even communicating all of that isn't enough. Even sharing and communicating, it just isn't enough. It's just one side of a two-way street. You need to know what's running the other way. You need to be able to communicate, but also listen carefully, clarify, and consider how this person hears and responds. A big part of the work is assessing how they fit into your organization and whether or not they fit into the direction your organization is headed. And that's the two-way street. On one side, being intentional with the process and teams and in joining your organization to foster and nurture them along their path of passion and their pursuit of purpose. Plus, the second part is assessing and ensuring that the path you're about to pave for them is also one that takes your business where you want it to go. That alignment means knowing your business inside and out. Take the time to think about and intentionally carve that road. That alignment requires knowing your people inside and out. Take the time to learn about and intentionally consider how they fit in or don't. Now let's come back to the story about Jane. Even if her company had handed her $1 million every year just to keep her around, they would be getting an absolute steal. But honestly, Jane says to me, even if they did that, I wouldn't stay there long term. Why? I ask her. And through the conversation, it becomes really clear. It's because their real problem isn't money. It isn't even culture. They don't know how to identify Jane's high performance and incentivize her to keep doing her best work, how to harness her passions and pave her path forward. They don't know how to carve out time and opportunity for her incredibly impactful projects. They don't know how to acknowledge, reward, and cultivate her unique talents. They lucked into hiring a unicorn, but they treated her like a pack mule. Lucky for them, Jane was sitting in my office because I showed her how to carve out a path for herself, despite and through the resistance of her leadership. Because we were able to help her get promoted and get 5 more incredibly high performers under her leadership. Because our work allows her to cultivate her team into the highest performing team at the company and show leadership both their errors and their opportunity. And all of that in a way that's aligned with where the company wants and needs to go. Unfortunately, Jane's leadership still chose to learn the hard way by continuing to bleed out their best talent. One by one, the most overburdened, underappreciated, overlooked talent leave, and they continue to distribute that work down the line, creating a snowballing avalanche of workload. Not until their churn reaches an astonishing 40% do they start noticing that Jane and her team are different. But Jane's team is protected from their ignorance by her leadership through our work. Fortunately, you don't have to learn the hard way, like Jane's CXO did. It takes knowledge. It takes intention. It takes effort. And now you have the knowledge. You know how to create the intention. The effort is up to you. And on that note, I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. If you learned something valuable today, take a moment to rate and review the podcast. It helps grow the show and gives more smart, high-performing, results-driven people like you the ability to learn and apply high-leverage psychology to your business and life. The Business Couch with Dr. Yishai podcast is produced by Dr. Yishai and PodTech. Music by www.purple-planet.com. Dr. Yishai is a psychologist, but not your psychologist. The conversations and content of this podcast do not contain or create any psychology practice, diagnosis, or therapist-patient relationship with the guest or listener. The information contained in this publication is for general informational purposes only and shall not be relied on or construed as coaching advice or therapy. So do your own research before using anything from this podcast. Thanks again for listening. I hope today's episode fulfilled my mission to help you leverage psychology better in your business and life.